On the Empire Podcast this week, we have guests galore. First, there's Salma Hayek and Miguel Arteta talking about their Sundance London standout, Beatrice at Dinner. And then podcasting legend Marc Maron drops by as well. WTF, right? WTF. All that and the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that crawled from its sickbed to get here. So show some cocking respect, you mothers. Hello, pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Or a cheap facsimile of such. Welcome to the Empire Podcast, brought to you this week by the lovely peeps at mustard.co.uk, who compare car insurance rates like nobody's business. They're just absolutely just really good at it. This week, I'm joined by the spectre of death just hanging over my right shoulder here, a man in a black cloak with a scythe. And can anyone else see this? Anyone see it? He's right there, grinning at... No?
That's William Sadler.
That's William Sadler. This week I'm joined by a horrible cold and two colleagues of such lethal cunning. First up is our geek queen, a lady who just told me that her favourite episode of Supernatural is the one where Sam and Dean Winchester cough Effie. Is this true?
I mean, it might be. It's hard to tell.
It is hard to tell.
Yeah, because I'm outside the small group of people who know what cough Effie definitely means.
Well, I know what it means.
Really?
Yeah.
So
it means to cough Effie.
It sounds like a throw-in for Bukkake at the moment.
No. Yeah. No, then it is not my favourite episode.
So, cough, how are we pronouncing it?
Cough Effie?
I don't know. This is the word that Donald Trump tweeted.
We need to find out what's canon.
Yeah, probably. Find that out.
I can guarantee there is no fanfic on this.
There is now. I'll be writing that while you guys are talking away. And then also there is, you notice I'm getting more Northern Irish as I get my cold. Yeah, as I get sicker, yeah. As I get closer to the grave. also joined this week by our West Wing guru, James Dyer, a man who must be slowly dying inside at the anti-Bartlett that is currently unfolding across the... Is there a West Wing episode where Jed Bartlett tweets a nonsensical word and then just leaves it for ages? Is there something like that?
It's not a popular episode. I will say this is the worst season 8 I've ever encountered of a show. It's funnily enough, I just started watching the new season 6 of House of Cards. And it is at the point here. Season 5. Five of House of Cards. And
how is it?
It's fine. I'm enjoying it. But there's a sense that... And it's no longer absurd. You know, at this point, it feels like light comic relief against the miserable pastiche of pain that is our political reality.
I'll go further. It felt to me like absolute wish fulfillment, because I would rather have two competent murderers
competent
in the White
sociopaths.
House.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like that, doesn't it?
Is it the best Robin Wright-centric piece of entertainment out this week?
We'll have to see.
Find out later on, because we will be talking about the week's big release. I wonder what it's called. Woman, you tell me.
So rude. Yay, Wonder Woman!
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I thought it was My Life as a Courgette, but there you go.
Also good.
We'll get to that later on as well. Before we go on, I'm just going to hijack this for my own personal ends for a second. I did a 10K run last week. Yes, Helen runs up mountains for a living. Yes, James rips logs apart with his bare hands. Don't you? You do, anyway. You do now.
Log ladies.
Look. Oh. What?
What? No,
that sounds even worse.
That actually came out really badly.
That was bad.
I officially retract that.
Yes, okay, good. It's retracted. I ran a 10K last week, and I did it to raise a lot of money for Bowel Cancer UK, which is not only Empire's personal charity, but is also the particularly pernicious brand of cancer that claimed the life of my dad, Tommy, in 2010. So it means a lot to me. And you guys have been amazing. People who supported me on Twitter and Facebook and all that sort of stuff. We've raised almost £3,500 for Bowel Cancer UK, which is amazing. I'd obviously love to go beyond that. 3,500 would be absolutely astonishing. So if you can find it in your heart to reward a fat man for getting off his ass and running at long last, and I'll be doing more as well, because I kind of perversely liked it, then go on to my Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising/Chris-Hewitt16, or just look for me, Chris Hewitt 16, on justgiving.com and donate whatever you like. That'd be absolutely amazing.
If you want to raise some real money, have you thought of, I don't know, maybe selling the film rights to I don't know, Simon Pegg might be available. We could maybe work something out.
Well, that's a pre-make.
And we should say that Chris did all of this with a a cold, which you can still obviously hear in his voice right now.
I'm the hero we need and the one we deserve.
Well, come on. I think we deserve a bit more than that. Do we not?
I think this is all I can give. Either die a hero or you live yourself. Live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Unless, of course, you're in American politics, in which case it's the other way around. Right. Or any politics, quite frankly, because we've got our own situation coming up. But anyway, we're not going to get political on the Empire podcast. We are apolitical.
God forbid.
On the Empire podcast. We would never, ever labour to tell you who we support here. That would be terrible. Speaking of labour, here's a question. Congratulations to Phil Dissemblian on becoming a father.
Hooray. Well, he didn't do very much of it.
No, he didn't. Congratulations to Phil Dissemblian on coming to father, says Kate McCambridge via email. My question is, what is your favourite labour/birth scene in a movie? I'm a midwife, says Kate McCambridge, and tend to get tetchy about realism, but a cock and bull story has a good labour scene. I've also got a soft spot for the birth scene in Chris McQuarrie's The Way of the Gun, where Juliette Lewis has an emergency C-section. I was a C-section. Performed by a dodgy doctor in a Mexican brothel. Weird, so was I, during a gunfight. If nothing else, it makes me feel better about my own working conditions.
Right.
Not getting political, but you know, there's an NHS midwife there.
Surely the only right answer to this is Alien Resurrection.
Why Alien Resurrection?
Because
why not any of the other aliens?
A pregnant alien queen in labour, obstetrician just out of shot, and she gives birth to that gelatinous sperm creature, the newborn.
And that's your wow.
That to me is the most realistic labour scene.
That to you is birth, is it?
It is. It is.
That's really disturbing on just so, so many levels. I can't even compute. I actually know the right answer to this.
Okay, go on. Hit me.
Shoot him up. It's not a labour scene unless someone is having a gunfight with Paul Giamatti at the time, I don't think.
That's fair. And then, doesn't he seeks out Monica Bellucci because she's a lactating prostitute?
Because she's a lactating... Obviously, he needs a wet nurse for the baby.
Amazing.
And because the mother is, spoiler, killed. He has to keep the newborn baby alive.
So you're right, that's a much more realistic...
It's so much more realistic than... probably on a par of realism, really, let's be honest.
The least realistic, I'm saying Revenge of the Sith. And not because of the little droid midwife, but just honestly, first of all, I mean, yeah, it's, I would say it's the future, but it's not. It's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Indeed, yes.
But the labour lasts about 6 minutes. She names them both as they come out, which is non-traditional. And then pops the clogs.
I mean, she knows what she wants. You can't really criticise her for that. And Luke and Leia, like the names together, have a nice ring.
It's true.
Do you think they came to her in those names, or did she have them written down? The big book of galactic child names.
It's a risk, isn't it? Because you hear some people who like don't really pick a name until they've actually had a look at the baby and seen if it sort of fits.
Well, and then other people... You look like a Steve.
Yeah. And then other people are, you know, have... No, you're definitely going to be an Aloysius, you know, before they kind of come out, so...
Do you think Anakin had any say in the names of his kids? And maybe this is why Darth Vader has trouble when a Luke Skywalker turns up in his life. He doesn't immediately go, ah, that's my son, because he was going to call him Gordon. So it would have been Gordon Skywalker.
He would have been like, what?
He's like, yeah, what's happening here? Princess Leia, no, don't get that. Princess Fiona, wait a minute, now we're in Shrek. But you know what I mean? I think he might have pegged it a little bit earlier. He might have figured it out. Yeah, that scene's awful. It's awful. And I, you know, I have a soft spot for Sith.
Yeah.
Another space birth that's much better, I would say, is J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. The birth of James T. Kirk in an escape pod.
Really good one.
While Chris Hemsworth...
I'm not sure about the timeline of that one, but yeah, it is perfect. And it is one of only two films ever that have made me cry before the credits.
That is a teary one.
Before
that
the credits.
That and Up, isn't it?
No, before the credits, it's that and Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
That's really sad. Yeah. Just left with the one egg.
Yeah. Anyway. No, but this one, yes, it does. It jokes here. It's very well shot, that, and it's very well. Pulls on all the right strings.
Definitely.
Yeah, so it's Jennifer Morrison, isn't it, playing his mum?
Yep.
And, what's his name? The dude. Luke Hemsworth?
I think Luke it's Hemsworth.
Luke Hemsworth. Or Gordon Hemsworth. If his dad had any say, it would be Gordon Hemsworth as Kirk. Yeah, that's an amazing scene. I'll mention the scene in 9 Months, which is a dreadful film, but is a lot of fun. It has Robin Williams as a full-on crazy doctor.
That's right. Julianne Moore.
I am always surprised, actually, at how few films there are about pregnancy, birth, and all of this. Like, it genuinely, given how, you know, everybody is born, and probably a good, what, third, 40% something of the population at some point in their lives give birth, it seems bizarre to me that it is such a relatively overlooked topic. Actually, apart from, like, you know, you can basically list the sort of pregnancy-centric films on maybe not one hand, but certainly on two big films. And that's bizarre. I mean, we've nearly had more alien movies about the sort of the horror of birth than we have about realistic, actual motherhood. And, you know, anyway, we'll be talking about sexism later today, so then, let's leave it
well,
there.
Well, maybe, Helen, but I think you're meant to be in the kitchen later on, so...
Okay.
Not so sure about that.
But, you know, bit of joke if you're going for a realistic labour scene, the film would be 12 hours long and mainly involve, you know, intermittent screaming and
but
periods of...
But why haven't we seen, for example, you know... Okay, we've had a pregnant cop in Fargo. Why haven't we seen a woman trying to solve a mystery during labour? That's the kind of thing people would come up with if we had a slightly more equal Hollywood. Genuinely, like, during that 12 hours, the hospital would be in lockdown for some reason and they'd have to figure out who killed the what's it. I mean, it would be a thing that would be happening.
So during contractions, she would make deductions.
Between contractions, she'd be doing deductions.
That's amazing. That's a tagline right there. Between contractions. She makes deductions.
I think we're on something.
I think we are.
I'm going to make some calls.
What would it be called?
It probably would just be called contraction. Like, you know what it would... Like, because it'd be like the tension of, like, everything would be getting...
Yeah.
Yeah. More tense.
But, you know, like, there's Miss Marple, there's Poirot.
Yeah.
Murder in the Orient Express.
This would certainly have to be a Mrs. Marple, or it'd be quite shocking.
A Mrs. Marple? My word, yes. This is true. Especially given how old is Miss Marple? It would be a medical miracle, wouldn't it?
It would be, yes.
Oh, my God.
Well, she's dead, isn't she?
Spoiler.
What?
Didn't they kill her off?
But you killed her off,
yeah,
what?
Probably. It might be, this may well be wish fulfillment. Mm-hmm. I can't say it.
She's really, really old, dude. I mean, I can't believe you mentioned Alien Resurrection and not Alien, which is surely the greatest birth scene of all time,
oh,
right?
Oh, that's
Isn't it.
So a man giving birth is the best birth scene
it's
of all
miracle,
time.
It's a miracle, Helen.
Yeah,
thanks, Chris.
Look at the beauty of creation. I've turned into full David. Look at the beauty of creation. Ooh, it's lovely. Sorry. That's my David.
That was terrifying.
Oh, it's so lovely. Yeah, it's amazing. It's great. Nothing, it's never been topped. Never been topped.
It is very
I've seen horror films where things have flopped out of other things. And, you know, there's like Prince of Darkness where someone gets pregnant with a big green goo and then, you know. You know, or Peter Jackson's Brain Dead where someone essentially emerges from something else. And, you know, it's all fine, but it's not as good as Alien.
None of those are even close to as terrifying as the dream sequence in Junior. Do you remember this?
Junior.
Where Arnold gives birth to a small baby with his own face screams in a high-pitched version of his own voice. And then we all wake up screaming.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
That's quite terrifying.
Doesn't...
Knocked Up famously has the infamous crowning sequence and has Joe Baruchel and Jonah Hill kind of walking out looking PTSD'd after the whole experience.
They're PTSD.
They're the ones. Yeah, but if you look at Katherine Heigl there, she is immaculately made up throughout. She comes out of labour looking pristine.
Yeah,
so she fared quite well in that.
Blimey. Does a Man of Steel begin with Superman's birth? It's actual birth. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? You see...
I definitely remember it super well.
Really?
Yeah, I remember the dragons from that bit. I don't remember a birth scene.
Good old dragons. But, all right, maybe we won't mention that one. But I want to see... You've made me think about this now. And I want to see... Like, we've seen Luke Skywalker being born. We've seen Princess Leia being born on screen. We've seen Superman being born on screen. I think we should have a series of prequels that really go back to the nitty-gritty.
Oh, good Lord.
And we see some of the greatest screen heroes of all time literally emerge from their mothers. That's the beauty.
Why
that's
not,
right there,
why
the
not
moment
go back
of creation.
And see the conception,
I know what you're,
Look Who's Talking intro style.
Oh my God.
No. Where you see the little talking sperm swimming the way up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, don't you want to see how Hannibal Lecter emerged from the womb?
No. Oh, God. This is not the solution to the glut of origin stories. That's just, you've got to stop doing that. Stop
he
that.
Would say.
That's just not right.
I ate his liver with some Farley's rusks.
Am I?
And a nice bottle of milk.
Is that like a deer sound at the end? I'm confused.
I think it's meant to be a baby. It's really hard to tell.
Okay.
It's a baby. We've literally been talking about babies for the last 15 minutes. I'm so broody.
All right, fine. Well, let's derail that. What about
the two?
Renesmee's birth in Breaking Dawn.
I was going to ask you about that because I saw someone mention it earlier on, and I may not have seen it. So tell me about it.
Now, I can't remember. Does it happen in the film? I'm sure I have in my head from reading the book that doesn't Edward like eat it out of her? Doesn't he have to bite it out or something?
No, not quite. It's a cesarean, but then he and I think his dad have to bite her lots to get loads of vampire venom into her system to save her life before she just dies because she's too human to have a vampire baby.
That's right. And then the baby essentially gets married off 5 minutes later to Jacob Yewtree the werewolf.
Yeah. Well, no, he tries to explain, and it's just imprinting. It's not a weird thing, but it is weird. It's super weird.
So very, very wrong.
I did a roundtable interview for that with there were other journalists on the table.
Did you imprint upon him?
And one of the other journalists had not done basic research before arriving to this roundtable. So before he came in, she sort of goes, "What happens to Jacob in this film?" And someone explained to her that he imprints on the baby, and you know they're going to live happily ever after one day when she's older, and basically the first 5 minutes of the interview were this woman just saying to Taylor Lautner over and over again, "I could not believe it. They were telling me that you imprint on the baby. I could not believe it. That's crazy." Literally 5 minutes of the round table.
Oh my God!
It was entertaining. Anyway,
that's share her horror.
What's your worst round table experience?
I mean, that was up there.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, that was horrendous. We also had one where somebody, a different woman, spent a good 15 minutes talking to the director about theology and wouldn't let anyone else get a word in. It was vaguely relevant to the story, but not 15 minutes worth of relevant. So that was quite painful.
At the risk of being slightly Brexit, the problems that come in roundtables are when you're on international junkets, aren't they? They do tend to be.
Oh my I think God. Some.
No, no,
he's
but.
He's gone
but
full Nigel.
I'm not
full,
going full Farage.
Full Farage.
But you do get very specific regional journalists with slightly specific agendas. Like someone from Norway might. Their line of questioning might be, "When are you going to visit Norway?"
I have seen that happen.
I have heard that.
And I've also seen. Possibly the same journalist. I'm Norway's premier film journalist. Do you remember that time that in Headhunters, the female lead in Headhunters is if someone had cast Helen in a movie, she's like Norway's Barry Norman.
They could have.
They could. And if you're listening to Hollywood, I know you are. Then get in touch, and I want 10% of the take from Helen. That sounds wrong.
That sounds super wrong.
But there you go. So Norway. But I've also seen a Norwegian journalist give talent. That's what we call the people who do the acting folks. A Norwegian jumper.
Ooh, I like this.
This is a gift from the people of Norway. Which reminds me. Sorry.
Did a roundtable for Poseidon with Emmy Rossum. And I think I was just looking a little bit peaked and tired. And she said, she was saying, "You're right." I said, I'm very hungry. We haven't really eaten. She said, "You're kidding. You haven't eaten." And she picked up the phone and she called room service and she ordered me an enormous bowl of chips.
Wait,
I'm not even kidding.
Chips?
Chips.
Is that, cause
and I know she did something
to
similar
me.
To you as well.
Yeah.
I think she's a feeder.
I think she is.
I think she's a feeder.
She literally picked up the phone and said, "We need food up here in mediat mento."
I shouldn't say that
I remember the word.
Did she say...
Immediate mento.
Wow.
She ordered me chips on mine. She asked me what I wanted as well. I was like, chips? Chips it was.
So hang on. So a Hollywood starlet who has money to burn, because as we all know, they're all millionaires, all of them, asks you, you can have anything off the hotel menu, and you go for chips.
I'm a man of simple tastes.
You are a man of simple tastes.
But then ironically, when Heather Graham asked me if I wanted a cup of tea, for reasons passing understanding, I said, "Yes, please. Do you have lemon and ginger?" and she did, and she made it. But that was the first thing. I was probably nervous. That was the first thing that came out of my mouth. Do you have lemon and ginger?
That's absolutely astonishing. Yeah. That's astonishing. Remind me one day, because we're running out of time. Remind me one day to tell you my tale about the time I watched a German journalist insult Billy Bob Thornton on a round table, and that did not end well. So, I'll tell you about that one day.
Billy Bob
not right
Thornton
now.
Called me pretty.
He did the same to me.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, so amazing. He really is a good Santa. Right. Let's move on. I think we've satisfied Kate McCambridge with that with
we're
an answer.
We're so sorry. We appreciate your hard work.
Yes, we're sorry about everything, frankly. If you want to have your question read out on the Empire podcast, you can do so by emailing us, as Kate did, on podcast@empireonline.com, or you can Facebook us as well, where we're at Empire Magazine. And you can also, as they say, tweet us on the Twitter machines, where we're at Empire Magazine. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast. Okay, time now for a guest. Now, as I announced on the show last week, Tom Davis, who is the star and co-creator of Murder and Successful, he was meant to be on the show this week. He, of course, stars as the brilliant D.I. Sleet, who investigates murders alongside, very high concept, alongside celebrities as well. It's a semi-improvised show. It's really, really brilliant. Sadly, he couldn't make it. So, at noon yesterday, we had no guests, not one, not a sausage, not a drop. But then Hollywood, as is his wont, came right into the rescue. So this morning, I went to the Picture House Central, where Sundance London is enjoying another triumphant year. One of the standout movies there is Beatrice at Dinner, which is a sharp, sardonic, and surprisingly sad drama starring Salma Hayek as a working-class woman who gets invited to a high-end LA dinner party with unexpected results. It's a fantastic cast. You got the likes of Chloe Sevigny and John Lithgow and Connie Britton. But of course, Salma Hayek is numero uno on the call sheet. And she was in today, along with her director, Miguel Arteta. So I popped along with my cold to say hello. Luckily, it turns out that Salma was just as ill as I was. Enjoy. Oh, wait, hang on a second. What is this? Holy cow, it is Tom Davis himself who is calling in, I think, to explain why he's not on the Empire podcast this week. This should be explosive. Tom, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, yeah. How are you doing?
Yeah, very, very good. Where are you? What are you? What's happening? Why aren't you here?
I'm actually just in the midst of saving the world. Seems like... Comes before past the laugh. I'm unfortunately, I've got a big script deadline, which is about saving the world. And, I've had to do that. I've sort of completely been snowed with scripts and what's not. And, next stuff. Which sounds very boring, actually. I should have just gone with saving the world.
Yeah, no, I would have accepted that. Yeah, you're busting up a drug ring or doing something similar. But... But that's fine. That's fine. But just very, very quickly, we will have you on the podcast properly one of these days. But Murder and Successful, which I adore, that came to an end this week. It's on BBC Three. It's on the iPlayer at the moment. But is this it? Is this it for Sleet? Is there any more?
No, I mean, it's such a weird thing because, well, we definitely, it's not the end of Sleet because we're in talks about doing a feature length version of the show as such. Sort of using the sort of same sort of framework, but we don't want to end this. We want to sort of maybe go in a bit of a more different direction with the play around with the series a little bit more and give it a wider scope, sort of Ratman wise.
Okay.
We just wanted to sort of do something that was a bit more sort of ambiguous, really. And we're sort of not a show that's commissioned with two or three series in the locker type thing. We sort of go by series. So, I'd love to do more. It's literally a dream of a job to do it. It's my favourite show to make. It's much fun, I think, to make as it is to watch. So, we weirdly now have tons and tons more people who want to do it. So it'd seem a big shame not to do any more.
No, it's amazing. It's the best show this year I've seen in which Richard Osman blows in someone's penis. And I'm including that infamous episode of Pointless.
That was literally the happiest moment of my life when he agreed to blow his it was a very cold day as well. that was all involved and I was a little bit worried about being in such a skimpy pair of pants on TV for the first time. And thank God he obliged.
If any listeners haven't seen this episode, check it out. It's the first episode of Series 3. Richard Osman from Pointless teams up with D.I. Sleet and things go horribly awry. It's really, really funny. Check it out. But Tom, I'll let you go. But so what are you working on? What's the script?
We're working on a thing called Action Team at the moment, which is our ode to Bond and sort of old-fashioned spy and sort of a satirical look, I guess, at the world. I mean, to be honest, every time we think we push the limits of crazy, someone in reality comes out and becomes even more weird and crazy. But yeah, it's big, it's scripted, it's 6 episodes, and it's, you know, it's just very, it's very silly. I think someone described it as Naked Gun meets Born, was what ITV were talking about it then, okay. Which is, you know, big things to live up to.
So,
but it's, again, it's just very, very silly. And I think it's going to be good. But you're not going. We're filming in Croatia, so you should come out and see us.
That's an official, unretractable invitation. I like that. Yeah, it's good.
I'll buy you a big Steiner of lager.
Might need some Lemsip. All right, Grant, you're on.
Good man.
Brilliant. Tom, thanks, man.
And also, thanks for that hiding last game in the stadium.
That's not a sex thing, by the way. That's Yeah, it's a football. It's a football thing. Yeah, so, well, believe me, so am I. But yeah, come on. Yeah, you have to get you on the podcast physically soon.
Definitely.
All right.
I look forward to it.
Brilliant. Cheers, Tom. Thanks, man.
Cheers, mate.
Bye. That's a first. That's never happened before, and that was completely spontaneous and not prearranged in any way, shape, or form. There you go, Tom Davis. If you haven't seen Murder and Successful, it is absolutely fantastic. One of the most original comedies I've seen. All right, so we were interrupted just as you were about to get Salma Hayek and Miguel Arteta by the guest who didn't show up but did show up. So now here is Salma Hayek and Miguel Arteta. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by Miguel Arteta and Salma Hayek. Hello, welcome to Sundance London. How does this compare to the Sundance in America?
Well, this year the Sundance in America had a lot of snow.
Yeah, we've not done that.
And it's very sunny today.
I know, what's going on with that? It's crazy. This is our British summer right here, one day. Miguel, what was your Sundance experience like?
It was beautiful. You know, yeah. I've been going there for 20 years. Uh-huh. But I was particularly proud of this film. And to have worked with Salma. Uh-huh. And I think it was Salma. Was it your first time at Sundance?
Not my first time, but it's not a place I go very often.
Yeah. Okay.
But it might have been my first time. It's my first time with a leading role as an actress.
Okay.
And with such good director.
What was your first time? Can you remember?
Why you do this to me? I have a cold like you do. You know, you cough all night and you don't sleep. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know, I actually directed one little film for Showtime, and uh-huh. I shot it in Utah, and they picked it up. They brought it to Sundance, even though it was for television. So that's a very memorable experience for me.
That's amazing.
That I went with that one.
Awesome. Yeah, I've got a... Can you tell I've got a cold? I think it's fine.
Listen,
I think
you're going to be able to tell I've got a cold. Don't worry.
It's not, please don't edit that out.
No, of course not. It's not noticeable in any way, shape, or form for me. But, pardon me. And Miguel, your first experience of Sundance. So you said 20 years ago. So
yes.
How long have you... obviously, you don't go every year. Do you just go when you have a movie, or do you...
I've gone when I've had movies and when I've been a judge a couple of times.
Okay. And what's the experience like down there?
I mean, the festival is an incredible experience because they really, truly reserve a lot of spots there for what I call discovery films, mm-hmm. people that you've never heard of before.
Yes.
And I was one of those persons 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And there's a certain flavor to the movies that Sundance picks. There's a truthfulness, honesty, and a personal aspect to it. And a more of a global awareness than other festivals. Yes. So I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And Beatrice at Dinner is a movie that feels, it feels very Sundance. It feels almost tailor-made for Sundance. When you're working on a film like this, is that at the back of your mind? Do you think we might premiere this at Sundance? This might be the launch pad for the film, in a way?
I don't think so. Mm. No. This is a very personal movie for all of us. Mike White wrote it. He came to me and Salma and said, I have a movie that I think would be great for the three of us to make together. Mm-hmm. And I was delighted when I heard what it was about. I've been wanting to work with Salma for a long time. And I think
me with him.
Yeah.
With both of them, yeah.
Okay. And so we were interested in what the movie was about. And I felt that the role fit Salma really well. So it was exciting for me.
And Salma, did you feel the same when you read this? It's a fantastic part. It's a fascinating, multi-layered part.
It's a fantastic part. Yeah. You know, we got together one afternoon, and you know, they said, we have a project for you, and I was so excited. And I said, well, what is it about? A dinner. Okay, and it's a dinner.
Yeah.
And what happens? People talk in a dinner, and that was all I got. So at some point I remember thinking, for sure I'm going to be the cook or the servant in the dinner. I have a small part, and I'm just in the kitchen cooking in this dinner. I'm not even. And I said, well, what do I play? And he said, a masseuse. And now I was really thrown. You know, it's like, what is the masseuse? And he wouldn't. They knew more, but they didn't tell me much more. And I would have played the servant or the woman in the kitchen just to work with them. I would have played anything. But when I read the film and I read my part.
Yes.
Also, there's something strange about it because it was 2 days before my birthday. 2 days before my 49th birthday.
Uh-huh.
2 days, 2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay.
And then on my birthday, he hadn't started writing yet. He says, I'm not sure. I'll just write and see what happens. On my birthday, I got the script.
Wow.
I got the email with a note that said, happy birthday. This is my gift to you. And then I read it. And I was very, very emotional because it's such an amazing... It's one of those parts you dream your whole life. And when you get to be 49, you think, okay, it never happened, you know?
Yeah,
and then it came. And when I turned 50 the year after... We celebrated on the set.
Amazing.
So lovely.
Amazing. While you were shooting the dinner table scenes, dinner party scenes?
No, thank God that was over.
What was that like? Because I imagine the shooting a dinner party over and over again from different angles and getting all the different coverage must get slightly interesting at times, maybe even a little dull from your point of view, Miguel?
I think it's definitely exhausting for the actors that they have to eat salmon for 3 days straight. For this movie, it was surprising. We did three days, that dinner sequence, because it's a large part of the movie. Yeah. We shot it for 3 days. But they went very fast for me. It's an incredible ensemble in the movie, led by Salma. And in that dinner sequence is when Salma and John Lithgow really start squaring off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's particularly fun. And Salma had a lot of dialogue there. I remember
but I didn't find it boring at all because they're such good actors. It was so interesting. Every time we did it, it was completely different somehow.
Yeah.
I didn't dread at all. The one I really dreaded, which was a lot of takes, was the singing singing where I have to sing.
Yeah.
Because he had to cover every single person. I had to, and I have stage fright.
Oh my God.
I had to sing that song over and over, and I was so embarrassed each time. I was so in pain for the other actors that had to hear me over and over and over,
God.
And it was in the middle of the night. This one was the worst for me.
Oh my God. So how did you get through it?
Well, you just have to do it. You just have to do it. But imagine how self-conscious that these people have been hearing you sing this song a million times.
Yes.
And you're still singing it.
Do you find different variations within the song as you're going along? Do you changing things and just
No. You cannot
can't change. Yeah.
They kill you in this movie. This was not like a kind of movie where you improvise.
No improvisation.
This is the kind of movie where you do as you're told.
Yes. Yeah. But going back to the idea of the dinner party scene, what I meant by does it get dull for the actors was the eating. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, you've 3 days straight of salmon after salmon after salmon. After salmon.
Well, I was vegetarian, so I ate lettuce. For me, there was no problem.
So it wasn't too much. You're not stuffed afterwards.
No, John came up with some brilliant idea, and he taught them how to make steak out of watermelon. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right.
So he knows, he has a trick to make watermelon look like steak.
Wow, okay.
And that's, so that's what he was eating.
Wow.
After a couple of...
You know, I didn't know that till now.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
That's amazing, because I'm always amazed at the commitment that he has eating his steak. You know, he's a very meticulous actor, and I actually really respect how actors, the way they commit to eating.
Yeah, yeah.
The way John was eating that steak and talking without interruption, yeah. It was like a dance of the knife and the fork and the mouth. It was unbelievable the way he did it. It was so realistic.
Wow.
And he did do that for 3 days straight.
3 days straight. And it's watermelon. Watermelon.
At the beginning, I think it was meat, and then said, okay, time to change it to the watermelon. Yeah. This is how you paint it, and this is how you put it. And
that's amazing. I want to read the end of the John Lithgow cookbook now. I want to see. I want to see what other tips he has. That would be fun. But also the movie. There's a simmering sense of righteous anger that fuels the movie. There's a sense of indignation at the way the world is, the haves and the have-nots. You could say that John Lithgow's character is a reference to a certain somebody in the White House right now. Is that fair to say? And can you talk about that?
Well, it's everything is fair because it's your point of view.
Mm.
It was not written to be that.
Okay.
But, you know...
I just see Trump everywhere at the moment.
Exactly. I think the audience are definitely coming up with that. Yeah. We did it before he was in the White House.
Mm.
Miguel can tell you more about this.
I wish Donald Trump was as sophisticated and fun as the way that John Lithgow portrays that character.
Yeah, he likes his watermelon well done, exactly. I believe. But I was just, even the name, Doug Strutt, it feels very much like Donald Trump. It feels very much like that sort of finite. Yeah.
I think you'll have to ask Mike White, but the movie was initially inspired by the dentist that killed that lion, Cecil the Lion.
Yeah.
That was a complete outrage.
Yes.
And at the same time, just months after, Donald Trump said he was going to run for president and said those awful things about Mexican immigrants. And I think, you know, it was a combination of all these events that inspired.
There's just so many of them out there. It's hard to know which one is it, you know. It's true. There's so many people like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I will let you go now. Miguel, thank you so much indeed.
Before she keeps talking.
I was beautiful. Thank you so much. I hope you feel better.
Indeed. Salma, I would say Lemsip. It's done nothing for me, but it might work for you. Try Lemsip.
Lemsip.
Lemsip, yeah.
Is it a coughing syrup?
It's a sort of lemony, cold medicine type thing. You get it as a sachet of powder. You put it into your drink.
Oh, God.
It's fine. It'll work wonders for you. It'll work wonders.
You.
There's a booth just around the corner. I'll nip around and get you some.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Salma, thank you.
There you go. Yeah, she was. I recommended Lemsip to Salma Hayek.
Okay, then.
Not lemon and ginger sip.
No, weirdly enough.
No.
Although nothing's working for me. I need some. Do any of you guys know holistic medicine? I might need someone to just.
No. Don't
do
that.
Why?
Just gargle with salt water, you'll be fine.
Salt water?
I don't think salt actually has any antiseptic properties.
I don't know. It helps me.
Well, there we go.
You can also gargle with soluble aspirin, but that tastes really ganky.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about some movie news. What's happening?
I mean, so little this week, but there were a couple of Godzilla-related stories that might be worth, I think, talking about. First of all, chronologically, in terms of when the film comes out, Godzilla King of the Monsters comes out in 2019, and it has added Thomas Middleditch to its cast.
I like
to bring
him.
A little bit of comic lightness.
As Godzuki.
Oh, good Lord. Don't even think it, in case somebody takes you seriously, James. So he is, of course, one of the stars of Silicon Valley. He's very, very good in that. So this is, I think, good news, actually. Yeah.
But every time I think he has a touch of the plums about him.
The Alley Plums.
Yeah.
Yes. Good to specify that. Is it just because he has curly hair and you're curly hair racist?
Yes. Okay. Sometimes I actually find... I look at Silicon Valley and I go, Alley's done really well for himself. I mean, Radio 1 and the lead in an HBO sitcom, and then I realise it's not him.
Yeah.
And I get a little bit sad.
So this is the one directed by Michael Dougherty, and it also stars Millie Bobby Brown, Kyle Chandler, Vera Farmiga, Charles Dance, O'Shea Jackson Jr., Anthony Ramos, hooray. Aisha Hines, Ken Watanabe, and Sally Hawkins.
Why did you do Hooray?
Because he's in Hamilton.
I thought so. There we go. So that's part the first of the big monster movie news.
Part the first of the big monster movie news. Part the second is that Godzilla versus Kong, so that's the 2020 follow-up, will be directed by Adam Wingard, who we like a lot.
Yes, we do.
We do like Adam Wingard a lot.
This is problematic for me.
Okay.
Because I like him.
Yeah.
And yet I have issues with the idea of the film.
Is that because one of the monsters is like one third the size of the other monster?
Yes. It's a logistical problem rather than a quality of film problem.
We
it bugs
discussed
the hell
this,
out
yeah.
of me.
We discussed this before. Godzilla used to be, King Kong used to be the Godzilla, just like a hairy toothpick.
Mm.
They increased him in size. Still just a hairy butt plug.
Yes.
So,
ew.
I'm a little bit...
My understanding of the story is that Kong will go into a bar and order a particularly spicy beverage. And then when Godzilla comes over, he will throw the beverage in his face.
Whoa.
Thereby giving himself an advantage.
I hope there are no humans in this film. I genuinely hope that. I think, you know, the humans in these films so far have been overwhelmed. And I just hope that this is like a huge big budget version of Steve Oram's. Ah! And it is just Godzilla and King Kong talking gibberish to each other. A bit like the Empire podcast. For 2 hours until they realize that they have something in common and they team up. As many people have said on Twitter, they both realize their
Mothra.
Mother is called Mothra. Yeah. Corfefe. Or Corfefe. Who knows? Maybe they come into it and they're like, oh, this is all horrible. I'm a little reserved about this. I think Adam Wingard is fantastic. Mm. We worship the guest here. It is, of course, the film that introduced the notion of our Empire spirit animal, Daniel Stevens. And yet, I've been waiting for him to break through the big leagues. And by big leagues, I'm not denigrating in any way, shape, or form the work that he has done in the past. But what I mean by the big budget leagues.
Big budgets, yeah.
Playing with a budget that has lots of zeros on it before the decimal point. And I just wonder about this one. Having said that, I didn't like Gareth Edwards' Godzilla very much. I really didn't like Jordan Floyd Roberts' Kong Skull Island very much. But Michael Dougherty is a very, very good genre-savvy director, and I have high hopes for Godzilla King of the Monsters. And Adam Wingard is just the kind of cynical, fucked up, I hate this word, but badass director that I think might bring something fresh to a film that could otherwise, I mean, you could just go to watch two tall people fight us at a pub otherwise. So there's got to be a little bit something more rock and roll to this movie, and I think he may bring that to it. But, and you know, every day is Christmas Eve.
Indeed. So fingers crossed for that. Also this week, I think we're all extraordinarily excited for the Transformers spin-off Bumblebee. And that got... We are, right, Chris?
Someone's getting
Christmas
stung
Eve.
By that.
Oh, dear.
Sorry, I apologise.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, honestly, how are we feeling here? I mean...
I'm feeling terrible, mate.
and you're hiding it well. Is the world ready... for Bumblebee.
Well, okay. Let's present the case for the defense before, I mean, because we all know the case for the prosecution. There's really no need to develop it. The case for the defense is this is being directed by Travis Knight, who is the boss of Leica Studios, who do nothing but great work, like nothing but greatness. And he directed Kubo and the Two Strings most recently, which is unbelievably great. And so... That's a good start.
And what we're saying is Bumblebee is going to be claymation.
I mean, I would be open to that. But what I think we're doing is Bumblebee might actually have heart and heft and emotion and human drama in it, as well as a car that turns into a robot. The fact that they've cast Hailee Steinfeld is potentially a very smart thing, because while she is currently a pop star and quite popular with the youth, I believe, in that role... Have you not heard her song, Chris? You're looking at me like you don't believe me. She's a pop star.
Is she?
Yeah, she did a song which has some extraordinarily naughty lyrics, which I definitely, definitely recommend you all listening to.
Chris has just picked up his phone.
She's part of Taylor Swift's squad, right? So she's quite cool and everything. But she's also a really great actress, given good material. I mean, I utterly adored her in True Grit, and I think she's capable of greatness.
The song?
I don't remember the lyrics. I think it's I love me, gonna love myself.
Oh, I can guess what the lyrics are.
There you go.
Okay, here we go.
We're not playing it.
No, carry on. Okay. I'm not playing it because of copyright issues.
Indeed. That's right. So you know, this might be one with some actual heart. I mean, I think the cartoons used to have that kind of thing where there'd be like a kid who would be helped by the Transformers, and maybe this will be that.
And of course, we found out this week that Transformers: The Last Night will be a mere 1,757 minutes long. So that's something to look forward to.
That was debated by Michael Bunk. So no, I don't think so.
So I think it's going to be like 179 minutes tops.
Yeah. He said it'll feel like 3 hours long, but trust me, it's going to be much, much shorter. Listen, let's give this movie the benefit of the doubt. So Hayley Steinfeld's lyrics. This is a song called Love Myself, which you can buy for 99p on the Google Play Store. Yeah, when I get chills at night, I feel it deep inside without you. Yeah, know how to satisfy, keeping a tempo right without you. Yeah, pictures in my mind on replay, I'm going to touch the pain away. I know how to scream my own name. Scream my name! Going to love myself. No, I don't need anybody else. Brackets, hey. And then it repeats in the refrain for, oh my God, the second verse is even ruder. No, I'm not reading that anymore. That's disgusting. She should be ashamed of herself. She should be stricken from the record. True Grit no longer exists.
How dare you, sir.
I sense you're about to describe this as a load of wank.
There's only one song about female masturbation, and that is I Touch Myself at the Finals.
Which is referenced in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Fact.
Oh my. Okay. Is it really?
Yeah, there's a point she makes of thing that she used to sing it to and didn't know what the lyrics meant.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the movie news, just very quickly before we move on. There was news on Avatar, which is definitely getting a sequel. That is a thing that is totally happening and is moving ever closer, accelerating down the track towards us. It'll be with us any second now.
So exciting.
Or at least on the 18th of December 2020 for the second film, the first of four planned new movies. Exciting. And even more exciting, Joel David Moore will be back.
He's back.
In the film.
By popular demand.
Norm?
Correct!
Hey!
Jim, but you're a big Avatar advocate, aren't you?
Can't get enough of it. I want more sequels, more than five. I want 100 sequels.
100
I want a
sequels.
Sequel every single year from now until forever.
Is this because you were instead of the last one and you just want to
spend my life in, basically that.
It's Australia, isn't it?
It will be 11 years by 2020. 11 years since the original. Just saying.
Yeah. So it's a new one shooting in Australia. The previous one did shoot in New Zealand. So this is what the next 15,000 of them are shooting in Australia. Is this what we're saying?
Australia and LA. Because Sigourney Weaver told me she wasn't going to be leaving LA for her bits.
Well, they did loads of it in LA the first time because they did all the volume stuff in LA.
Right.
And then they moved to New Zealand for the, you know, the studio stuff, the live action bits.
So Joel David Moore is back as Norm, which is great news for him. Bad news for the manager of the Wendy's he works at.
No, that's not fair. He is actually about to direct his second film, which is an adaptation of Timon of Athens. And if he can do Shakespeare...
Oh, you're a joke tramper.
I know.
You're absolutely... You just stamp on punchlines, don't you?
I did.
That's what you do. You take pleasure in it.
Yeah. And I do it again.
And also, as my lawyer, you have to point out that Joel David Moore does not actually work at a branch of Wendy's and has a thriving and successful film career on both sides of the camera.
There you go.
And I apologise for any offence caused to the Moore family and friends and associates at this time.
Indeed Wendy's.
Wendy's does not wish to be associated with Joel David Moore. We are backing away from that one. Now, he was great in Dodgeball.
Yeah.
He was good in Dodgeball. Right, okay. Yes, we should talk about other things as well. And this, it's not New Empire Week, but it's New Empire Spin-Off Week.
Like Bumblebee.
Yes, this is Helen, our Bumblebee.
Yeah, Helen and James are now spinning off. They're fighting crime in a labor ward. And alternatively, we have released a one-shot, which is the 101 Empire Presents 101 Classic Scenes. So if you've been reading Empire from the beginning, bar a few issues where we ill-advisedly junked it in favor of something else, and you guys revolted with pitchforks and torques. You came at us with Peter Torque. It was really horrible. 100, there's a classic scene in the back of the magazine every month. At the moment, it is chosen by famous people. But historically, it's been chosen by us. So 101 of them are in there, including some brand new ones. So I'm just flicking over the open the magazine now. We've got one from A New Hope. We got one from Manhattan. One from The Thing. One from 48 Hours.
We've got the 20 jokes about his nose from Roxanne.
We've got
the poison scene from The Princess Bride.
We have a lot of
great monologues and stuff. So if you're an acting student, this is definitely the addition to buy.
Yeah.
But even if you're not, it's so good.
It's a magazine.
Yeah.
These are written down. They're not performed.
No.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is people might want to.
Absolutely. Who would not want to perform? He says, opening one at random. 82 toothpicks from Rain Man.
Who wouldn't?
I wouldn't.
Why not? Weirdo.
Because it's impossible to improve upon the performances of Dustin Hoffman and Thomas Cruise Mayweather IV. Okay, and that is on sale right now. £6.99 and all good and evil news agents. Go and buy one immediately.
It's gorgeous.
Or we'll kill you.
What? Nah.
Good.
As your lawyer,
etc. Any other movie news? There's something about Dwayne Johnson and Angelina Jolie being linked with the Dark Universe. Anyone?
Yeah, that's a rumor, I think, at this point, but it's certainly an intriguing one. There was speculation that he might be a wolfman of some sort, which I would be intrigued by, potentially. But I think we have to wait and see a little bit how The Mummy is received, which I think will be interesting. I think it'll do fairly well, actually. But we shall have to see that. And then, of course, they have Bride of Frankenstein to go next, so it's not obvious how they'd necessarily fit in there.
Mm.
But we shall see.
It's all very exciting. It's all very, very exciting.
Also, Clark Gregg has been cast to join Guy Pearce in The Spinning Man, and I mention this only because we all know Clark Gregg is far better known as Agent Casper from The West Wing.
Really?
Yes, fact.
Coulson from S.H.I.E.L.D., you know it. I don't know who that is. Well.
Agent Casper. Him and Josh have a run-in. It's brilliant.
It was brilliant, I agree. Yes.
I love that episode. Is that the episode where they discussed ethics and morality and politics?
And wandered the corridors. It was, walked actually, around. Yes.
Yeah, and someone said, walk with me, and then they walk with him. And should we talk about, very, very quickly, the fact that Paddington 2, first teaser trailer is out, and yes, happy days.
Yeah, it's super charming. Go watch it.
Yeah.
Been a few trailers this week, in fact. There was Logan Lucky had a trailer.
Oh, so
amazing.
Good.
Amazing.
Which was really good.
Yeah. Very Coen-esque rather than Steven Soderbergh, I thought, but it also has his stamp on it, naturally, given that he does every single job on set, pretty much. So that's very, very good. Also has Daniel Craig doing an accent, which I can't speak for the veracity of it, but I enjoyed it.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if it's right, but it's fun.
So. Yeah. So get on that one as well. And then the last thing I think we need to talk about real quick is another announcement of another Spider-Man movie in the Sony Spider-Man universe, and another one without Spider-Man. This one is Black and Silver, which is about Black Cat, or is it Silver and Black? Anyway, it's about Black Cat and Silver Sable.
Hot fact, I have the number one Silver Sable comic.
So do I.
Because everyone bought it in the early 90s. The Silver Embossed cover
yes,
one.
Silver yes, Silver Embossed, yeah.
Yes, worth nothing.
I bought it in a comic store in Liverpool, my very first trip to Anfield to see my beloved team.
Well, I bought it at Calamity Comics in Harrow on the Hill.
Isn't it amazing?
So fuck you.
Helen, do you have it?
No.
Do you want it?
We've got several of them.
Yeah, it's like, bargain. I mean, it'll make you a lot of money. I'll £100.
So anyway, they're making
£200.
They're making this film with Gina Prince-Blythewood directing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Which is exciting. She's good. She did The Secret Life of Bees and Beyond the Lights, which was an excellent, excellent film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Beyond the Lights might give us a clue on casting? She says, hopefully.
£20.
£20.
£20. £15. I'm still trying to sell you my comic.
I'm not going to...
I don't know. Possibly.
I think she'd be quite cool.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Sorry, we're talking about Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who starred in Beyond the Lights, which was very good indeed.
Yes. And The Secret Life of Bees was Dakota Fanning?
That is correct, yes. With Jennifer Hudson as well, Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany would be a great Silver Sable. But he's already The Vision, so...
Oh, such a shame.
Wouldn't quite work.
Queen Latifah was in there as well, Alicia Keys.
Yes,
yeah.
Oh, Alicia Keys. Dakota Fanning teaming up with Gugu Mbatha-Raw would be an excellent sort of super anti-hero team. If you don't know who Silver Sable and Black Cat are, by the way, Silver Sable is a mercenary within Spider-Man universe, silver hair, dreadful comic that James and I are trying desperately to get rid of. And
she hunts down war criminals.
She hunts down war criminals.
Like Simon Wiesenthal.
Sure.
I genuinely thought you were going to say something really libelous there, so thank you for saying that. I thought you were going to... So my heart began to race. Yeah. Speaking of libelous things...
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, you should... if you want to come and see the Empire Podcast team, fly by the seat of their pants and say things that are potentially libelous before we get a chance to cut them out. This is a big sell. We are going to be appearing live again this year. We're going to be appearing on Saturday night at the London Podcast Festival, which is a huge festival dedicated to podcasts, as you might expect, based in London. Not London podcasts, but there's some amazing podcasts. John Hodgman's coming in. My Dad Wrote a Porno or doing a show, all sorts of stuff. So we're doing a show, I think it's 9:30 to 11:30. So a very late one. Saturday the 16th of September, I believe it is. We're going to have a special guest, aren't we? Yes, yes we are. We're going to have an amazing special guest. It's going to be extraordinary. You're going to see the Empire Podcast team there as well. If you've never seen us live, it's an absolute shambles. So do come along and watch that unfold, the horror unfold in front of your eyes.
It'll be great.
It'll be great.
So
you can get the tickets. There are tickets on sale right now on the King's Place website. So go to kingsplace.co.uk and check it out. And you can, if you book for multiple shows, so us and other podcasts, if you really want to see some other people, they're amazing, amazing podcasts, you get a discount. So do check them out. And we'd love to see you there. It will be, I believe, in terms of volume, our biggest show to date.
Whoa.
Exciting. And late nights, we might go R-rated. Yeah!
We always go R-rated.
Yeah, fuckers. Right. And yes, I agree with that casting. I forgot what I was talking about.
Okay.
Black Cat and Silver Sable?
Sure.
Yes, and Black Cat is Felicia Hardy, who is a neighbour of Peter's who becomes romantically entangled with him, and she also happens to be one of the greatest cat burglars in the world.
You know how it is.
Yeah.
She also has powers.
She has powers, yeah.
Bad luck powers.
She does.
She's shit long shot.
And that's it for this week's movie news. Do come and see us, as I say, at the London Podcast Festival. And we should have now our second guest, because we're up to our balls in guests this week. We really are.
Confusing.
I know. Literally, genuinely, at noon yesterday we had nothing. It was just going to be this for an hour. And then obviously Salma Hayek and Miguel Arteta came through. And thank you to James for hearing on the grapevine that Marc Maron was in town to talk about his role in Glow, because you made it happen. You made it happen, James.
I do take full responsibility.
Did I make it happen a little bit?
No.
No, okay. James made it happen. Helen made it happen.
I did not.
Even less than I did. But anyway, Marc Maron is he's a podcasting giant. He's a true podcasting giant. If you don't listen to his WTF podcast, there are over 800 episodes, but it is one of the best podcasts in the world, and has seen a procession of some of the biggest names in the world, not just movie people, not just music people, not just sports people, but Barack Obama, back when he was the President of the United States of America. And it is a hugely influential podcast. It's reinvigorated Maron's stand-up career and led to his role as Sam Sylvia on Netflix's dramedy Glow, which is about the gorgeous ladies of wrestling in the 1980s. So at the 11th hour, having found out he was in London, he agreed to talk to me, and I had an absolute whale of a time. I hope you do too. Here's Marc Maron. Enjoy. I'm delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by Marc Maron, star of Glow and podcasting legend. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, man. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. You've had a long day of press here in London.
A long day of insane press.
Yeah.
And the jet lag just started kicking in about midway through it.
Oh,
so
Christ.
There's a few interviews there. So a few short form TV interviews on in different countries where I'm going to, you know, just be, if you watch them, you'll notice I'm fighting back yawning and I'm trying to keep my eyes from crossing. But then I turned it around towards the end.
Okay. So how are you feeling now? Where are you now?
I feel all right. I went upstairs and tried to reset a little bit, and I had left the window open to let some air in, and now I have a room full of flies. I have a fancy hotel room full of flies. So I got my work cut out for me after this. I thought I was going to relax, but I'm going to be trying to corral flies out the window or trying to kill them, and it's just going to be a sad, ridiculous comedy.
They've got guys who can do that for you here.
Do you think?
Yeah, you just call down the front desk and send up the fly killer.
I bet you they do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, you know, it's like I thought that the world of Downton Abbey was gone. It's just reconfigured itself a bit. There's a, you know, yeah, just more updated outfits, but there seems to be plenty of people working in these positions that you wouldn't think would require that many people.
You would think, right? No, I watched a documentary in this ferry hotel we're in, the Mandarin Oriental, about a month ago. There was a 3-part BBC documentary about it. Pretty eye-opening.
Really?
The
how
lengths,
so?
The lengths that the staff will go to, the hours they work, the difference in class between, obviously, the people who work here and the people
exactly,
they look after.
Downton Abbey,
yeah,
right?
I mean, it's just crazy.
There was like at least 4 people involved in my room cleaning yesterday.
It's insane.
And I feel weird about it because, like, I carry my own duffel bag and there's a guy in a nice outfit who's like, you want me to take your bag? And I'm like, not really, I'm good. And there's part of me that's sort of like, you don't have to worry about it, pal. But there's another part of me that's sort of like, well, he's probably saying like, it's my job. But I don't get off on that type of luxury. You know, okay. I don't sort of like, yeah, take my bag. Yeah, treat me like I'm staying at the Mandarin.
Now, here's a question. I've asked a bunch of people who star Netflix shows this. Do you get free Netflix?
I don't know, I didn't ask. I already have it, but I'll put it on the list.
I mean, it's a saving of probably, what, $10 a month?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think I'm paying more than I should be anyways.
Really?
Yeah.
Dual Netflix accounts or whatever, but...
Something happened. Something went wrong. Yeah, I should get someone working on that.
You should look into that. That should be part of your deal when you start, you know, re-upping for season 2 of Glow.
Yeah, because, like, I do think I'm paying too much for it. I don't... There's a lot of things that I'm paying monthly that I'm not sure I even use that much. That's not one of them, but, like... I got a gym membership, but you just kind of keep those there.
Yeah, yeah.
You keep them going just to be like, no, I got to go. You're just paying for the shame.
They make it so hard to cancel. That's the problem. That's the problem. But Glow is another acting job for you. Do you consider yourself now an actor full time? Is that the day job or
no? I've always wanted to act in things and I don't really consider myself an actor. I think I can do it if it's in my wheelhouse. I think that I have a natural instinct for it, and I've learned over time, you know, primarily from shooting my series, how to be on camera and how to be comfortable with it. I don't think it's something that you can do, you know, you got to learn it somewhere. And I knew that my first season of Marin, and maybe even into the second one, I'd probably just have to take the hit. You know, I did okay, but there is something about becoming comfortable on camera that you can only do on camera. But I wasn't really planning on acting, you know, much after my show. I was planning on taking a break, both from stand-up and, you know, acting. But, you know, things came up where I had to do, you know, I played Carnegie Hall and I had to prepare for that. And then I got offered a special on Netflix. So I had to do a pretty extensive tour to build the hour plus for the special. And then like this script came to me from my manager, you know, out of nowhere, the Glow script. And I just saw it that like I could be that guy. Mm. And I was sort of convinced of it. You know, I was not, you know, desperate or looking for anything, but like, you know, I've wanted the opportunity to act on a show that wasn't really me. And I just connected with that script. So, you know, I put myself on tape.
Mm. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I have a personal trainer who I go to sometimes, this woman who's an actress. So I told her I needed help and she read Allison's part in the scene. And this guy who's like my part-time assistant, he used my iPhone and we did like 3. I went down to the street to the optical place. And I know the women who run it and I got some aviators because I thought this guy should wear aviators and I had a Lacoste shirt. So I kind of put some effort into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did about 3 passes on it and my agent sent them off and they booked me on that.
Amazing.
It was kind of amazing. I just knew the writing was solid and the guy was sort of beat up and a little down on his luck and kind of deluded, you know, delusional in terms of who he was in the world. And he was kind of a dick, but, you know, he wasn't a bad guy. I just, I thought like, this is something I can do. And I had some very clear ideas for him. Very quickly.
Okay.
That, you know, I kind of told the showrunners, you know, about, you know, how this guy does coke. You know, what, you know, that, you know, they had given me soft pack cigarettes, and I'm like, you know, this, you know, he needs a flip top box because he's got to put the coke in there. Wow. You know, like, because I was like, I told the showrunners, Carly and Liz, who are kind of dorky, you know, and they're in their late 30s, I guess. And I said, look, this guy, he only does coke out of a bindle that's cut out of a magazine, you know, and, you know, he never, he's not flashy, he's not sharing it. He uses it, it's part of his life. He does it with a key or a pen top. And they both looked at me. There was this beat, and they're like, one of them says, we're so glad you're here. I'm like, I knew this wisdom would come in handy.
Amazing. Wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately. Mm-hmm. Immediately. Can you trace all this back to the success of the podcast, of WTF?
Absolutely. Yeah, there was no doubt that, you know, when I started the podcast, it was pretty over for me, really. I was pretty broke, gone through a couple divorces, and, you know, I couldn't really draw as a stand-up, so that work wasn't really there, and I didn't really set myself up to do anything else.
Yeah.
So the podcast was sort of this kind of born out of desperation to keep engaged, and, you know, there was no plan for it. There was no way to make money with it at the beginning. And, you know, it's just a decent cosmic timing, and I seem to have a skill for it, you know, that, you know, my conversations and, you know, my disposition, you know, kind of created some sort of unique new approach to talking to people in a public forum. And podcasts give you a lot of freedom, but it got popular, and I think the medium sort of got attention around, you know, the same time that I started doing it. I think I had something to do with that. And, you know, I certainly think I, you know, kind of enabled a lot of people to think that they could do podcasts.
Yes.
And that's fine with me. It's all good. You know, I didn't invent interviewing. I don't know that I'm really an interviewer per se, but there was something about the timing of WTF and the podcasts that were around and marginally popular at the time. Yeah. And then the medium sort of blowing up to the degree it has, which is not, it's still not huge, but it's certainly a living. You know, I was, you know, I could just be doing only that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah, it did open the doors to the Marin series and then to, you know, another book. And, you know, I think from that, you know, these other opportunities came, but I'm ready and able to do them. I don't know that I would have been at another point in my life. I may have thought that I was.
Yeah.
But I don't think I really was. Like, you know, I had to let go of most things. Like, you know, when I was in the podcast, it's like, I don't know where I'm going or what's happening. You know, I didn't want to be like a B-room headliner for the rest of my life.
Yeah, but of course.
I didn't see that as, you know, it was sort of a do or die situation. There was no answers and it didn't look good, but I was talking on the mic and I was doing this podcast and I was working with a guy who's my business partner and producer who I respect a great deal and is a very brilliant guy. And he had faith in me and we didn't really know where it would go, but I didn't think I would do television. I didn't think I'd be a popular comic. And I had to really sort of accept that. As a grown-up, like, all right, so that shit's probably not going to happen. You know, you're in your 40s, you know what I mean? And it didn't work out. So that's that. So let's just do this thing.
Yeah.
And see where it goes.
Yeah.
So because I didn't think anything was really going to happen, you know, when things do happen, I'm like, really? Okay. And, you know, I can show up without fear or without desperation, you know, like, you know, I don't spend much money and the podcast now earns money and, you know, so I'm not in that zone of like freaking out about money. So I can make choices. I can say no, and I can do things that I want to do. And yeah, all of it came from reinventing myself through doing a desperate podcast.
I mean, I've listened to a whole bunch of your film interviews over the last few years, most recently Walter Hill.
Oh yeah,
it's a really interesting one. So you know, that, you know, you seem to be a real film guy, on a certain.
Yeah,
level.
I mean, yeah. Like, you know, there, you know, a lot of times with the directors who are hard to get, really, they're hard to get because if a film director is working, they're working for a year.
Yeah,
you know, so it's, you know, unless you're going to go find them. But some guys don't talk. But they're like, it's better if I like the movies, at least two or three of them. Yeah. And guys who've been at it a long time, you know, even if you don't like their movies, you understand why they're directors or why they're great directors. I mean, I've been fortunate, you know, the directors I talked to outside from Walter were, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson, Noah Baumbach, who else have I talked to?
Bogdanovich.
Yeah, Bogdanovich.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like there's more. Am I forgetting some? Because, like, I do all right with them because I, you know, I do have, like somebody, like, here's a good example. Gary Marshall, who has made some movies, you know, that were big successes. You know, not in a long time, but Pretty Woman is a big success. Oh, Rob Reiner. Carl Reiner. And, you know, there's a lot of those guys who, you know, there's a movie they made that sort of like, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's economically or creatively, it was a huge movie, like a, you know, a sort of world-changing movie in terms of movies. So you just got to hang on to that one, you know, and figure out why or where they went with their other work. And, you know, I take a different approach to all of them. And I've usually not seen all of their, oh, Herzog. You know, that was a tricky one.
Yeah.
But, you know, someone like Walter Hill, who comes from the old days.
Yeah.
And Bogdanovich, I thought, was very revealing that, you know, like, you know, he, you listen him talk for an hour and a half. Oh, Friedkin. That was masterful.
You just listen to Friedkin. He just.
Yeah. Yeah. And guide him a little bit.
Yeah.
And keep him away from politics. Because, you know, you go down a rabbit hole. It's unnecessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like someone like Bogdanovich, you know, he's got no idea really on some level in talking to him about why he, how he fucked himself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, precisely. I know exactly what you mean.
So, you know, but he's like, he was a visionary guy. Yeah. So I do have respect and appreciation for film. And, you know, I always have, and I know the players and, you know, Walter Hill, there was a few great movies, but he was, you know, you got to get back into the history, man, you know, getting them going about Steve McQueen and William Holden and that stuff he talked about, now I'm spacing the director's name, that was being sort of misrepresented in that Betty Davis movie, The Feud.
Like, oh, God,
what's his name?
As well.
Aldrich.
Robert Aldrich. Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Aldrich. That was some powerful shit where he's like, I just need to speak up for, you know, I knew that guy. And all that stuff about, like, you know, Alien, about Aldrich's idea for it's got to be like an shaved orangutan. I mean, it's beautiful shit, you know.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of arts. You know, I'm a music lover and I'm a, you know, film lover. And, you know, I love, you know, I've recently been talking to more actors because I've figured out how to talk about craft with them, which, you know, not all of them can talk about because not all of them have one necessarily in place, but some of them do. And, you know, that sort of opened up for me recently. There was a time where I'm like, oh, let's not go too hard on the actors because a lot of times there might not be a lot there. But, you know, if you figure out how to talk to them about process, then you can get there.
I will have to let you go. But I want to ask one last thing before I do, because I know you're jet-lagged.
I'm all right.
You're flying home tonight?
No, I'm all right. I'm
okay, you're all right. But you mentioned that there's still people you haven't gotten the podcast, despite your godlike poet powers.
I don't have any godlike powers. Like, you asked me, like, am I always... Like, we work through bookers now, you know, who present people who are doing stuff. A lot of people you can't get unless they're out pitching, you know, or out junketing. And they know my show, so, you know, they know that I'm not going to do that kind of interview. But, you know, that's sometimes where you get the availability. And a lot of times I don't know if it's going to go well. And a lot of times I say, like, yeah, that might be interesting. And then 2 days before, I'm like, why the fuck did I do that? Why am I going to talk to this person? What's going to happen? And I never bail out. But, like, I genuinely sometimes don't. Like, when it comes to the day of, I'm like, what did I do? How am I going to talk to this person for an hour? What? And, like, you know, I get on the phone with my partner, you know, Brendan, my producer. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck. What am I going to do with them? And he said the other day, who was I worried about? I don't remember who it was. It was coming over. I'm like, well, how am I going to? He's like, you interviewed a guy you'd never seen or heard of once, which is true.
Is this Kevin McDonald?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and you pulled that off. So what are you worried about this for?
Amazing.
I don't know if he's happy about that.
Oh, he's got it. Listen, this has got to happen before. I was tremendously, when he came on the scene, I was tremendously excited because of the other Kevin MacDonald as well. I remember once I was in a bar in New York about 2 years ago, and Kevin MacDonald, Kids in the Hall, Kevin MacDonald was in the same bar. And I don't get starstruck. I don't, you know, but I did with him. You know, my friends were like, come on, say hello, it's Kevin MacDonald. I couldn't do it. I just watched him creepily from afar, like a little stalker.
Oh, wow.
For until he left the bar.
Well, the funny thing about the wrong Kevin MacDonald is, like, I couldn't post it because I didn't do a full hour. And I knew that, like, the only way we could post it is if we get the other Kevin MacDonald and we post them together. They have to be up to, and, you know, I finally got him.
Got him in the end. Awesome. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
I will let you go, man. Cheers.
Right, thanks for nice talking.
Thank you. Cheers.
That was Mark Maron, and before we get into this week's review, I should tell you my handshake story. So obviously, as you can tell, I have a cold.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the interview, I just I just shook his hand. And then I went, oh God, no, I've got a really bad cold. And he went, oh God, oh no, I've touched you now. And he had to go off and wash his hands. And I just sat there mortified going, oh God, I've just given Mark Maron the cold and it's awful.
He washed his hands, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's just one there in my sort of hall of handshake infamy, fame type thing.
But Barack Obama didn't do that.
I bet Barack Obama did not do that. I wonder if he used his toilet. Do you remember the time Channing Tatum used the toilets at our offices and we were absolutely mortified?
Oh, my God. It was a mapping, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was our old office, which seemed to be the site of a permanent dirty protest.
Ew. I should say, this is the men's toilets. And the ladies were a lot better.
And we used to have people in for web chats and whatnot quite regularly.
It was awful.
On the rare occasion they would ask to use the facilities, we'd all just die of embarrassment.
It was awful. Absolutely awful.
They'd come out covered in feces. I mean, it was just...
Oh, God.
Which reminds me, tell me about your Tom Hardy story one of these days as well.
Yes. Speaking of being covered in feces.
Oh, no.
Okay, so that's enough of that. Time now for this week's reviews. Review might be more accurately. Reviews, okay, well, yeah. Now, there is no spoiler special dedicated to this week's big film. That is beyond our control. Here at the Empire Podcast, we only do spoiler specials if we can get to talk to the talent behind the film to get inside their heads. That was not possible. Patty Jenkins, the director of Wonder Woman, for that is the film we're talking about, did not come over this week to the UK, sadly. But we are hoping, just like George Miller and Chris McQuarrie before her, she will do so at some point and we will get her then. But in the meantime, we'll be doing something next week.
Yes.
Spoilers specially-ish, just not a podcast. So look out for announcements on Twitter and Facebook. We'll pick a time and we'll do something. In the meantime, let's talk about this, Helen. Let's talk about this film, this Wonder Woman film.
Yeah, so we start on the island of Themyscira, which is the home of the Amazons. They are led by Hippolyta, who is Connie Nielsen. She explains to her daughter Diana, the only child on the island, how they came to be. They were created by the Greek gods to defend and protect the world of mankind because the god of war, Ares, had sort of corrupted man's hearts and you know, turned them into big fighting stupid heads. And so the idea was that the Amazons would through their example and through their leadership and occasionally through their arse-kicking ways, sort of lead mankind back to what they were supposed to be. Unfortunately, Ares influenced mankind then enslaved the Amazons. Zeus had to rescue them and hide them on this special island, and they've been hidden there ever since until they'll come back one day in our hour of greatest need, is the idea. And meanwhile, Zeus beat Ares. Ares fled, and all seems to have been okay. So Diana's grown up in this environment. She has persuaded her aunt, Antiope, who's played by Robin Wright, to train her as a warrior. Antiope is super cool, and so Diana also grows up pretty darn able to handle herself. And all seems to be fine until the day that a World War I plane crashes just offshore, and what do you know, there's a super hot guy in it. Steve Trevor, played by Chris Pine.
What?
I know, right? He's pursued by a platoon of Germans who are determined to get back something he has stolen in his spying mission on the Germans. And the Amazons have to make short work of them. And then, basically, Diana wants to go with Steve to the world of men because she figures if this is a great war, if this is the war to end all wars, then Ares must be involved somewhere. Therefore, it is my mission to go and personally kick his ass. And that's basically the setup, really.
Was that the synopsis? I feared you were recording the audiobook.
Do you mind?
Sorry, carry on.
That was a very skillful recounting of the first 80 or 90 minutes, I'd say.
It was 20 minutes worth at most.
It was perfectly
34 minutes 57 seconds, Helen. We're going to split. Okay.
I think for a mid-level classics lecture, that was there. Here's an interesting story, completely unrelated to this. I was once given a 25-minute classics lecture from RoboCop. Peter Weller. This is a thing that happened. It has nothing to do with this. Carry on.
Well, I don't know if I will. No, you can fucking do it yourself.
Yeah, right. I think you may have got the floor with this.
No,
one.
He did. He did. I was on set of Sons of Anarchy, and he talks about that. He does lectures at university.
Yeah. Anyway, we have 9 minutes to review
right.
this film. That's
right. Okay. Write this down. Your Tom Hardy story, your Peter Weller story, and my Billy Bob Thornton story. Helen, do you want to throw any stories
we'll
in the next
special?
We'll do it next time. Okay. Right. Okay. So that's the story.
Yeah.
But is it any good, Helen?
Yeah.
That's what people want to know.
Yeah.
Is this film, which is the latest iteration in the DCEU, the much maligned DCEU that you and I have...
Personally much maligned.
...lamented and maligned over and over again in this podcast.
Yeah.
This is the film that, we've heard bad things about.
This is the film that actually has what the other two mostly lacked, which is actual charm. I say two, three or four, right, depending on how you count. This one has characters that you like and root for and want to do well. This has a character who cares about doing the right thing and doesn't grow a beard and go off to Alaska. You know, it seems to get what makes Wonder Woman work. And it also gets what makes Wonder Woman interesting and what has made her loved for 76 years now without a big screen outing. You know, it's true to the character. She feels like Wonder Woman. She looks like her. She acts like her. She is determined to save lives and not just go off and get glory for herself, which is important. I think there's a little bit of that because she's very young in it and she's very kind of naive about how the world works.
A couple of thousand years old.
Yeah. But we don't quite know how that all works and how time passes on the island, so it's all a bit unclear. She has a great relationship with Pine Steve Trevor. I think it's one of these things where he's awesome, she's awesome, they kind of respect each other, both of them have knowledge that the other one needs, and there's an exchange there, so they feel like equals, even though one of them is a literal goddess. It kind of works between the two of them, and I think that's really, really important. He obviously brings a lot of humour as well, but also there's the fish out of water humour that she has. She's super gorgeous. I mean, like, crazy
is she
gorgeous.
I hadn't noticed.
I hadn't either.
No.
Tell us, Helen.
No, like,
is she pretty?
Super gorgeous.
It's because I passed out halfway through.
Chris Pine look like some kind of slack-jawed troglodyte. It's astonishing.
Let me assure you that she does not.
He looks all right.
Fine.
Fine.
I mean, it's not his best haircut ever, but fine.
Fine.
Fine
Pine.
The other ladies are astonishing. I haven't mentioned Lucy Davis, Etta Candy, who's traditionally her best friend in the comics. She again brings a lot of comedy to her bits. Mm-hmm. We've got Saeed Tagmaui. We've got a really nice little supporting Ewan Bremmer, a little sort of comic supporting cast around them. You know, bad guys led by Danny Houston, who should always lead bad guys. That's what he's there for. It's a nice balance of a cast.
Not the Red Skull.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I really enjoyed it. There are flaws.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of bad CG shots for whatever reason, whether they ran out of money or time, I don't know. There are a couple that really are not good. There's a big, big punch up at the end, and I liked it better the second time around. But it is still a big CG punch up.
Yeah.
And I could have done without it.
Well, yeah.
But there are also some great, great action scenes, and I just was charmed and I liked it. And I have not had that experience with any of the other DC films in years.
Okay. So, as you know, I'm a Marvel guy. And I so far haven't had a great relationship with the DCEU. I like elements of Man of Steel. I like elements of Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. I hate Suicide Squad. That movie is absolute trash. It's horrible, horrible film.
Four Stars Empire.
Four Stars Empire. Okay, I'm getting the hot flush. And I'd heard things about this movie going in, you know, a few months ago. I'd heard it made, you know, might be in slight trouble, blah, 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 blah. So I went in with very, very low expectations. I love this film. I absolutely love this film. I think this is fantastic. I wrote the Empire review. If you haven't read that, do check it out already. I gave it 4 stars. So, spoiler alert, we gave this film 4 stars. Reason we don't give it 5 stars is because of that last 20 minutes. I have a major issue with the last 20 minutes. It does dive off a cliff somewhat. But for a large part of this movie, I had a big, goofy grin on my face.
Yeah.
I was loving it. It's sincere. It's got a heart. It gets it. It doesn't try and reinvent the wheel. It's not trying to give us something new visually, I would say, like a Doctor Strange or play with the conventions of the genre like Guardians 2 did with its opening Baby Groot sequence. It's not trying to do that. It's a very sincere, straight down the middle superhero flick that models itself, and you could argue possibly too closely, on the likes of Superman the movie, particularly Superman the movie.
Yeah, definitely.
And Captain America the First Avenger, and even there's elements of Thor in there.
Yeah.
Now, but at the same time, those are good movies to model yourself on. And if you can get that right, and if you can get the heart right, and if you can get the tone right, and you can get the casting right, and the central relationship right, then you are in business. And this movie is fantastic, and I'm going to go see it again multiple times. I think it is really infectious. It'll leave you on a giddy high if you can just get past the last 20 minutes. Gal Gadot is fantastic as Wonder Woman. Chris Pine is great as Steve Trevor. Their relationship together is redolent of Lois and Clark in the original Superman the movie.
Lois and Clark.
And I don't think there's any higher praise than that in the superhero world. It's fantastic. Jimbo, what do you think?
I agree with more or less everything both of you have said, which makes me very uncomfortable. But no, I'm with you. I think the DC films have been uniformly dreadful to date, and I was 100% convinced that this would be equally bad, and nothing I had seen up until now convinced me otherwise, and I was very pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed the beginning, the sequence on the Amazon island. It was lovely to see where all my parcels come from. You know, I thought she was great in the role. I thought Pine was really charming. Both just ooze charm, just incredibly charming. And I think that's the one thing that these DC films have lacked. They've lacked humour, they've lacked charm, they've been bleak, they've been po-faced, they've been miserable. And this one made you feel quite buoyant. It made you feel happy.
We should actually credit, I think Patty Jenkins gets a lot of the credit for that, because she, I had a chat with her on set. We didn't do a formal interview till later, but I did a chat with her on set, and I came away from that so comforted, because just in about a 5-minute conversation over her lunch break, she just showed that she knew what the character needed to be and needed to do. And actually the character herself has changed a little bit since her appearance in Batman v Superman, where she was suffering a little bit of ennui or you know, disillusionment with mankind, and actually they've kind of decided she can never get quite that disillusioned, and they realised that when making this film. And I think that's a really good sign for DC's future as well, that someone's going to be fighting to keep at least one character thoroughly kind of hopeful, and I think that could really, really help the balance when it comes to Justice League and beyond. So
I found her a bit tedious and throwaway in Batman versus Superman, but then that describes the film as a whole. I quite liked her little cello riff, which I'm glad to see makes a recurrence here. But no, she's a lovely character, and I don't come to this with any kind of, oh, she's not like the Wonder Woman I remember, because I could not give a toss about classical Wonder Woman, because I've never read it. I'm not a DC person. I barely read a Batman comic. I am Marvel through and through. So I'm not kind of coloured by any preconception as to who she should be. But I loved who she was on screen. And as you say, the film bore me along all the way until the wobble at the end. And I think perhaps a couple issues I have with it, there's one piece of inexplicable casting, which we can't really talk about. But other than that, no, I'm a fan.
Yeah, I came very, very close to giving it 5. And if it hadn't been for that dive off a cliff at the end, I think I might have.
I think dive off a cliff is harsh, but yeah, I know what you mean. I would say, actually, I have read a bunch of the comics, and obviously watched the TV show as a very tiny child. And I think in some ways in the comics, for a long time, she was a great character in search of a story. And very few of the writers, not you know, there have been some over the years, but very few have really nailed what makes Diana great in the comics. Gail Simone did it in the last few years, but it, you know, it took a long time to actually make her work consistently on the page, and I think they've done, they've gotten her right off the bat here. So happy days.
Credit to them also for doing justice to some of the more ridiculous aspects of that mythology, like the lasso of truth, which actually becomes quite a funny device. So I thought that was absolutely quite entertaining.
And I loved Invincible Jet.
Liar.
You guys couldn't see it, but it was,
but it was there.
It was there. It was there. So then, 4 stars indeed for Wonder Woman. Fantastic film. We've had 3 comic book movies so far this year. I know that's a lot. We're in June. That's 3 and 6 months, guys. That's overdoing it. They've all been great, in my, for my money anyway. So
yeah, but we also had to watch Iron Fist, so it wasn't all win-win-win.
Okay, so Helen, my life is a courgette.
What about it, Chris?
Tell me about it.
Okay. So this is a new, not very new, French animated film about a young boy who is sent to an orphanage after his alcoholic mother's accidental death. So a kindly cop, who's voiced here by Nick Offerman, sends him to this children's home where he kind of befriends the bully and has to try and foil a distant relation from taking the new girl who he has a crush on away from the children's home, basically. Basically, it's one of those things where the plot isn't so important. It's more about the animation, the character drawing, and just the tone of it. This is a gorgeous, gorgeous story about, you know, a traumatized and a lonely little kid finding a sort of a home, I guess. It's not sentimentalized. It's very honest. It feels kind of authentic. And even though they have obviously sort of plasticine-looking hair and weird facial features, but you just find yourself absolutely rooting for these kids. I mean, they've got these huge eyes. They just seem, they're beautifully, beautifully animated. This was nominated for the Oscar last year, and deservedly so, because they are just so expressive, and you just kind of fall in love with them and you want the best for them, and it's really worrying. You're worried that they won't get it. It's only 66 minutes long, so you absolutely have the time to spare to go see this, and it is super charming and very thought-provoking. So yeah, do look out for it. If it's on anywhere near you, it's highly recommended. That's 4 stars.
4 stars, another 4 stars. But film of the week, Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
Wonder Woman. So go and check them both out. My Life as a Wonder Woman and Courgette, the latest in the DCEU, is out now. And that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Do check out the Pirates of the Caribbean Salazar's Revenge Spoiler Special, which will be up probably by the time you listen to this as well. The Mummy Spoiler Special is coming soon as well with Alex Kurtzman. And join us next week for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by, potentially, Michael Sheen, who have wanted on the podcast forever. Stuart Hazeldine, who's the director of Exam and next week's The Shack. And maybe Rachel Weisz. We'll see. And, you know, maybe Tom Davis will pop in. You never know.
How many guests do you need?
I know, we've gone from famine to feast. It's amazing. Until then, it is goodbye from Helen.
Toodaloo.
It is goodbye from James.
Bye-bye.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to read the lyrics to the second verse of Hailee Steinfeld's Love Myself. I'll take it nice and slow. Feeling good on my own without you, yeah? Got me speaking in tongues. The beautiful, it comes without you. Yeah, this is disgusting. See you next week. Bye.